Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity, the leading podcast for residential service contractors, sponsored by Service Roundtable and hosted by David Heimer.
Hi, this is David Heimer. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to mention two things. First, I want to say thank you to Daikin Comfort Systems for sponsoring this episode. I have a huge appreciation for Daikin for their support for us and for what they've created in our country. Specifically, I'm referring to their manufacturing facility outside of Houston. Did you know it is the largest heating and air conditioning manufacturing facility in the world, and they built it right here in the USA. You know what that means? Jobs for Americans. I love that. If you get a chance, please ask for a tour of the Daikin manufacturing plant. It's really impressive. You'll learn a lot, and it's fun to see. The second thing I wanted to say before the episode begins is that this is a little bit of a self-indulgent episode. As Matt, Michelle, and I were departing Service Nation after 20 years, people kept asking us a lot of questions about Service Nation, how we started it, our memories. They wanted stories and insight. So this episode is all about that. It is a little bit self-indulgent, but you'll find it interesting, and we'll wrap up with some advice for contractors. So enjoy. Hi, this is David Heimer. Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity. Well, we're going to do something really fun and different today. I'm here with Matt Michelle and Liz Patrick, and we're going to talk a little bit about Service Roundtable and Service Nation and just talk about how it was started and where it went and some of the funny stuff that happened along the way. People have been asking us to do this for a long time, so we're finally doing it. We've asked Liz to ask the questions because she's good at that kind of stuff. So Liz and Matt, welcome to Profiles in Prosperity.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David. Thanks for letting me kind of take over your podcast today. I think we got to go all the way back to the very beginning and talk about how you and Matt initially met.
We met at Lennox. Matt and I both worked at Lennox. I was in IT. We called it
MIS.
MIS, which was Management Information Systems. Matt was in manufacturing. And I remember we went to a manufacturing conference and realized we had actually been at school together briefly.
So we were sitting at this conference, and at lunch, there was a VP of manufacturing at Lennox at the time who had a personal computer. Personal computers are very rare because the MIS people guarded them zealously, didn't want too many people to have them. Well, this guy was an executive, so he had one, but he didn't really know what to do with it. And he would turn it on every now and then, I think. I'm not really sure if I remember it being on, but he had one. And, you know, and I know at one point in time, we swapped out his monitor because he had a color monitor and we needed it to test something. And we forgot to change it back and he never noticed. But David and I were sitting at this table and we started talking about this and talking about this guy. And we came up with our own version of the executive PC, which was basically an empty cardboard box and a screen that was really just a projection screen. And we would have three or four slides, one with a spreadsheet, one with a word processing document that you could change periodically so that he could have all the status of having a computer without really having to do anything with it. And we thought we could sell these for a lot less money. And management information system directors would buy them left and right because it would solve their problem of giving executives computers.
So that was your first collaboration?
That was it. Sadly, we never took that product to market, but I think it had great potential.
So then how did you guys actually finally partner together and start Service Roundtable? When you start working together on this, I know it was your idea, Matt.
Well, we worked together on projects within Lennox, and a lot of times we did some things that were sort of like internal skunk works. You know, I would need some information for something that I was working on and would go to David, and David would find a way to get it to me, and then I would pay him back by giving him marketing trash and trinkets that the IT guys never got.
He loved that stuff.
And then when I was at a different company, we started working on a flat rate pricing system, and David was in the middle of that. That never did go anywhere for various reasons. Not because I thought we had a bad product, I thought we had a good product, but just the way circumstances worked out. And so we just kind of, you know, treaded water for a while. And then when the concept of the Service Roundtable and Service Nation came about, David was a natural guy to support the IT and internet aspects of the product.
So what did those early days look like?
You know, it's funny. We worked really hard. You know, first of all, we raised money, and Matt put together this great meeting with potential investors, and they gave us money. Sort of surprised me, but
they gave us money, and then we realized that we were really going to have to work and build this. And then Matt and I would meet at 9 or 10 at night. We'd work till 2 or 3 in the morning. And, I mean, we were killing ourselves, but the weird thing about it is I remember it as being a lot of fun. We'd meet, and we'd work hard, but we were laughing all the time. And it was great.
And we kept awake because there was this coffee machine that they had there that predated the Keurigs. It was called the Flavia.
And I think
we used 1,000 Flavia little tubes to make Italian roast coffee and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, fueled by caffeine. It was great.
Well, I certainly remember you guys coming in and drinking coffee when I first came to work for you and I was in the kitchen.
Yeah, still caffeine addicts, I think.
Yeah, and you were drinking your Diet Coke.
So. This is true. So I have my own caffeine.
And in fact, the reason we started buying soft drinks in the office is to keep you well caffeinated.
So a lot of years went past. There's a lot of successes and a lot of failures. When you look back, which failures turned out not to be failures?
That's a tough question. I think some of the times failures I put out of my mind, but I also think that a lot of times they weren't so much failures as they were something that we learned a lot from. You know, the first time we put on meetings, they were awkward. We were a little bit disorganized, and we didn't have the attendance that we wanted to have at them. And sometimes I felt really disappointed about those. But the fact is, we learned a lot by doing that. And I think about the time we did a big meeting in Australia. Remember when we went to Australia? And the American contractors had told us, if you have a meeting in Australia, all the contractors...
We'll all go. Yeah. And if you go to Australia, we're there. Everybody's going to go to Australia.
Exactly. And, you know, almost none of them went.
Yeah.
And so I was really disappointed by that. But, you know, it turned out to be a great experience. We learned a lot out of it.
We got a lot of Aussies.
And the Australians certainly appreciated us being there. And we got a lot of Australian members as a result of doing it. But it wasn't quite the smashing success that I hoped for. But it was still, I don't look back on it as a failure, just kind of a learning experience, I guess.
I'll tell you the one that hurts me. And I think we had the right idea. And I don't know why it didn't catch on, is when we had worked out a program with the University of North Texas to where we would do a training program and those credits could then be applied towards a degree at UNT so that at the end of this training program that UNT would actually put on, and at the end of this, people would be really close to getting a degree if that's something they decided they wanted to do. I don't necessarily think it's necessary. And I certainly know a lot of contractors who don't have degrees. I think it's necessary to continually learn and continually educate yourself. And certainly the best contractors do that. But there's some that feel the societal need that I need to have a sheepskin on the wall, which this would have provided that, but it just went nowhere. And we had a lot of people commit and say, yeah, I'll do it. And it just went nowhere. So we killed it.
Yeah. Were there others?
We found, Dave was talking about meetings like the one in Australia, and we sort of found that there are a number of contractors that are reluctant to fly over water. We had a meeting
that.
In Puerto Rico, which was an awesome meeting, awesome location, awesome venue, everything, U.S. territory, no passport needed. We thought it was going to be a home run all the way, and it was a great meeting. But we had a lot of people who wouldn't come because it was over water.
Yep.
We found that our relationship with one of the trade shows, which was really good initially, and they had us close our fall meeting and co-locate with them with the unwritten agreement between the two of us that we would not lose money. Well, we started losing lots of money because the people that we had all the unwritten agreements with all left, and that eventually led to Service World.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you remember how we came up with the name of Service World Expo, by the way?
Yeah, it had service, and we were looking. Service World just sounded big, and serviceworldexpo.com was available.
So we were sitting in a conference room, and we were trying to come up with the appropriate name. And I remember thinking, let's see what the pattern is. The pattern, Service Roundtable, Service Nation, what comes after that, Service World. And I blurted out Service World, and Matt said, Service World Expo.
Boom.
Look it up. We looked it up, and we had the URL, so it was perfect.
Do you remember how we started? start designing Surface World Expo?
Yeah, so I wanted to do something that was different. So we approached this as exhibitors as well as attendees, because we've been an exhibitor at a lot of meetings and we've attended a lot of meetings. And most of the people that put on shows, they put it on only from one perspective and not the other. And so it seemed to me that every show was laid out like a grocery store with rows and aisles. So I took what became the events team, and we went first to an IKEA, and we wandered around through an IKEA, and I could see everybody's light bulbs going off that, yeah, this is it. And then we went to a Central Market, which, if you don't know, is a ridiculously priced high-end grocery store in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that is laid out like an IKEA. And you get lost in there, and you see all kinds of different stuff, and you spend a bunch of money. And the idea on Service World is we wanted our contractors to get lost in the exhibit hall, to meet lots of exhibitors, find lots of things that would help them make money in their business and do business. And that is indeed what's happened. I think it's a unique show in that regard. We're the only one that I know of that's laid out that way. And we make a conscious effort. We could be a lot better at it if it wasn't for the freaking fire marshal.
This is true. Going back to Service Nation and Service Roundtable, I know a lot of people have asked you guys over the years, why $50 a month?
Steve Saunders from Kipo was one of our founders. He's one of the first guys to really get excited about the Service Roundtable concept. And he insisted on $20 a month. That $20 is exactly what it needed to be, because $20, our marginal cost of adding a member is just a merchant services fee. But $20, we could scale it huge. We could be big. We could make it easy for anybody. And I thought $50 would be the same. Anybody could afford $50 a month. You know, and it wouldn't limit or inhibit anybody to join. And we wanted to make it affordable to the smallest contractor, because that was our charge and our mission when we started out, was to help improve the industry and help these small guys that were overlooked by all the alliances, all the dealer programs. Everything was generated for the top 5%. So we were trying to be affordable to everybody. And then it turns out that the people who were the most likely to see the value and jump in and join it were the largest contractors, because they said it makes this is a no-brainer. And smaller guys, when they do join, they don't stay small. They tend to grow. And we've got a bunch of them in our membership base now that are large contractors, but they weren't when they joined. And the common denominator with us, it's not that we are this size or this size or this size. It's not geographic location. It's that all of our members are growth oriented. All of them want to grow. And that's what attracts them to us. And it's what attracts our Roundtable Rewards partners to the program, because they want growth-oriented contractors who are going to grow organically, and we got them.
And we never changed that price.
Still a good price.
So over the years, what has surprised each of you most about what we've accomplished or done or rolled out?
I'm sort of surprised that every contractor isn't a member. It's just such a no-brainer. And, you know, it turns out that if you add up all the people, all the contractors that are members of all the organizations in our industry, it still ends up being a relatively small fraction of all the contractors. Most contractors aren't a member of anything. And for $50 a month, they could be getting great information. They could be streamlining their business. They could be getting great rebates. They could be working with some fantastic vendor partners, working with other contractors and growing their business. So that's the part that has surprised me. I mean, we've got more members than any other group. We thought by after 5 years or so that we would have something like, you know, what, 10, 20% of the market, and that hasn't happened. We still got a ton of members, but that's not what I wanted.
The original business plan, I think, had 10,000 members after 5 years. And we thought then we would start expanding into other vertical markets, other industries. And within the next 5 years, we'd double it. And, you know, here we are after 20 and we're not quite to 6. So it's still bigger than anybody else, but we should be 60,000.
And I remember cycles of where it felt like you worked really, really, really hard and then it got easier. It's like adding you crested a hill, but then it feels like you have to continue to climb another one and climb another one and climb another one.
I felt that most, Liz, with Roundtable Rewards, because I remember 1 year, and it was back in the days of Comfort Tech, we had just launched Roundtable Rewards, and you and I were going around trying to talk to vendor partners, and they were somewhat skeptical about us.
They were a lot skeptical.
Okay, they were a lot skeptical about us. It felt like we were pulling teeth. And 1 year later, we went to Comfort Tech, and we thought, same thing, we're going to be meeting with these guys. And they were lining up to meet with us. It was crazy how busy we were. The whole Comfort Tech was just basically one vendor meeting after another. And so, like you said, in that 1 year, we just had this huge peak. It's an amazing experience.
And I remember flirting with the $1 million payout. We thought we were going to hit it, and it took like 4 or 5 more quarters, and we finally did, and it went just never went back.
1 million, 2 million right away.
Yep.
Yeah. It's true. The first million is, you hear it all the time. The first million is hard to hit, and after that, it comes a whole lot easier. It's absolutely true. The second million came a whole lot faster than the first.
So thinking about Service World, does it surprise you that we're having meetings, that you enjoyed having the meetings? Because you were never going to have a meeting, Matt.
I never wanted a meeting. And if you look at the fact that we've got a whole team of people that work full-time year-round on Service World, I think that just proves the point. The only reason that we created Service World was there was not a trade show in that niche. I mean, the one that was there was starting to fail, and there was nobody else that could step up and do it. It was us or nobody. And so we did it. We did it somewhat reluctantly. But if I could go without having meetings, oh, I would do it in a heartbeat.
But they're fun.
I think, talk a little bit about the impact of ISH, because, you know, when we went to ISH, I felt like I saw potential that I had never seen before.
Well, ISH started out as another failure. So we thought, you know, we're gonna take a group of contractors to ISH, the world's largest trade show in Frankfurt, Germany. Who wouldn't want to go to this? And the first one, we got Ron Smith lined up to lead a small seminar. I thought we'd have, you know, 30, 40 guys, and I think we had, what, 3 or 4?
Yeah, maybe 5 total.
And the thing is we got into the show, and it just blew everybody away. It was massive. And we think AHR is a big show. AHR is nothing. I mean, ISH is mammoth exhibit hall after mammoth exhibit hall, and the way that they do business is different. They have full kitchens in the show booths, and the show booths are multi-story, and they serve beer and wine, and they entertain people, and they do business there. And we walked away from that thinking, wow, we got a lot of room to grow in our domestic shows.
Yeah. If you remember back to Comfort Tech, we had our own pavilion inside of Comfort Tech. And one of our innovations was we had beer. There was no alcohol served at those point in time. So we had beer. And when the rest of the trade show was basically empty, there we were. Ours was packed with contractors.
So if you remember the old Comdex show, which is a computer show, Microsoft had its own pavilion. And they had people that they invited in, you know, these special ones that got to be in the Microsoft pavilion. And these guys fought over being there. And so I thought, well, let's do that. And that's when we came up with the Service Roundtable pavilion. And then, you know, we had beer because we had beer at ISH. And we used beer at a number of shows. I remember there was a Canadian show, the CNPX show, where we had beer and realized that the age thing was there. So we thought, in the U.S., we could ask for IDs, and if you weren't 21, you couldn't have it. But the students showed up, and they could drink at 18 in Canada. So we started demanding that they turn in business cards. So these guys would give a business card, and then the guy would give them a beer. Finally, this guy comes walking down from 3 or 4 booths down there and says, I think you have all of my business cards.
Yeah, the students loved us. Wasn't so good for business, but it was great for the students.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the shows are important. The shows serve a valuable role, and we need to pay more attention to them, and kind of especially after COVID. You know, our response has been, if there's a show, we're there, and we're going to put the flag up, and we're going to talk to as many people as we can face-to-face and live.
Yeah, I think it also speaks to the need for the industry to support those, you know, contractors. You need to go to these shows. You learn a lot at them. You learn from other contractors. You get to see new products. You get some time away from the business to think about the business. Those shows are tremendously valuable. And of course, plug, I think that Service World Expo is the best of those.
It absolutely is. It's the largest show with a residential service replacement focus in the industry. And it, you know, serves HVAC and plumbing, and, you know, we're growing the remodeling side and electrical. But I mean, it is focused like a laser on what these guys are focused for. AHR, great show. If you want to buy a chiller, awesome place to go. But if you're a residential contractor, Service World is it.
So after a long time being in the industry, what's the number one thing you would recommend a contractor do?
Oh, well, that's easy. Join Service Roundtable or Service Nation Alliance. I suppose that's cheating. I should probably come up with something else.
A little bit. Matt, what's your number one?
You know, one and two go hat in hand. So one is that they got to grow. And too many contractors are complacent to just kind of exist. And when they kind of exist, they don't really run a business. They got a company that they own, but the company really owns them. They can take off any afternoon they want, but they can't take off for a week. If something happens to them, what's their family going to do? I mean, the single truck operator is the most selfish contractor in the industry. But if you grow, everything becomes more fun. Everything becomes more interesting. And you can grow to the point to where the business doesn't need you. Then you've got a true business. And I remember with us, we had one time we went to Ish, and so in Frankfurt, Germany. And then I stayed over for a little while with my wife, and we did some tourist things. Came back, was back in the office for a few days, then went to Australia because we were launching the Alliance in Australia. So I was over there for a few weeks, you know, again at the back end, did a little of the tourist things, came back. I'd basically been gone for 2 months. And I remember coming back, everything was better. Sales were way up. And all of you guys said, if you'll just stay away more, look what we can do. And I realized that the business didn't need me. And rather than being something that was threatening, that was incredibly empowering, because then I could work on the things that I wanted to work on. And I could delegate off the things I didn't like. I mean, David didn't have enough on his plate, so I could give him more work to do.
And somehow that filtered down.
But I mean, it is so much better to grow a business. I mean, I say this all the time, but you know, look in your backyard. Everything you see is growing or dying. It's the same way with people. It's the same way with companies. And if you have a company that's full of people that are trying to grow personally, your business is inevitably going to grow. And if your business grows, you've got a business that will be attracted to somebody else that will, you'll have an exit strategy when you choose to take it. So growth is important. But with that, you've got to grow profitably. And to grow profitably, you've got to price right. And contractors are afraid to charge what they need to charge. Just try it. Raise your prices. See what happens. My guess is nobody will notice. And the greatest price resistance in an organization is between the ears of the technicians and the owners of the company.
So I'll bounce back to you for a recommendation, David.
I think it's about branding. I think that a lot of contractors don't think enough about building their own brand and the value of their own brand. And we know that when people work with us, we help them create powerful local brands that they do so much better in so many different ways. It's easier for them to market. Their sales go up. It's easier for them to attract the right people to them. When it comes time to sell their business is worth a lot more. So building a brand and thinking carefully about what your brand is really important. It makes a huge difference, and it impacts a whole lot of things. I mean, I always remember that Dutton Plumbing, for example, they are the company you would send to your mom's house. And when you think about what that means, who are you going to send to your mom's house? You want the clean cut guy. You want the person that's going to take good care of your mom. You want somebody who's going to treat them ethically and honest. And who does that mean you're going to hire? Right? Who's going to apply for a job at that company? You're only going to hire people that you would send to your mom's house. So branding, all that fits in. It's part of your culture. It's part of how you market. It's how you present yourself. It's huge. But if you do it right, it makes such an enormous difference. And you look at our members that have done a good job with it, it's made a huge difference for them. So I think it's all about branding. Not all. There's so many different things you could say, but branding is certainly one of the most important ones.
You touched on culture. And I think that when I have listened to you talk about that, Matt, that it's very critical to the growth. So that it kind of ties the growth to the branding, to the pricing, right? The culture's got to be a piece of that, isn't it?
So I didn't get culture, right? I mean, we had a good culture, but I didn't really understand, you know, how it got there or what we could do to shape it until we went to the Disney Leadership Institute. So we took some contractors. This is another one of those things that we tried that didn't work.
But if we go to the Disney Leadership Conference, everybody's
guys
want to go.
we took a group to Disney. And at Disney, you know, culture is shared values, and values dictate certain behaviors, and behaviors drive results. So in the Disney equation, culture drives results. And that makes perfect sense to me, because you think about it, culture is self-executing. If you have the right culture, it will execute whether you're there or not, because you will have people that have similar values, which will do certain behaviors over and over again, and the results will be there. And that's why Peter Drucker said that culture eats strategy for breakfast. See, a great strategy has to be executed. Culture is self-executing.
Do you think we've given enough top tips for contractors?
Well, I think we're in the start of 2023, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the potential for a recession this year. David has one of the things that he does, you know, there's the real world and there's David world.
David has, I heard of David Day. I hadn't heard of David World.
David has David World, where he imagines the things the way he thinks they should be. And if they're not, he will try to do everything he can to will them into making David World a reality. And he won't accept anything else. And you can see this at play all the time, where somebody will say something and he just won't accept it. That's the approach that you need in a recession, because when a recession comes, look, a deep recession is a 3% reduction in GDP. We can overcome 3%. I mean, our seasonality in the HVAC industry is far more than that. We could cover 3%. And it's just that don't let the news media get in your head. Don't let the pessimists get in your head. Just decide that if there's a recession, you're not going to participate and you're going to drive the company forward and you're going to work a little bit harder and you can make up any deficit in the economy.
Well, in addition to that, if you're positioned that way, I think you come out of it stronger. You grow faster, don't you?
Yeah. When you're in a recession, it's like you're running a race into a headwind. You know, your competitors are going to stop. They're going to get tired. They're going to stop on the side of the road, walk, or sit down. And if you put a little more effort, you can maintain the same pace, and that gap will be insurmountable. And eventually, the wind's going to shift, and the wind will be at your back, and then you'll be flying.
Exactly.
And you'll be way ahead of your competitors at that point in time.
And that's when market share is gained. Market share isn't gained during good times, it's gained during bad times.
Very much. Yeah. So, funniest story you remember from the last 20 years?
My God, there's so many.
I keep hearing about the time I asked Matt to carry a small black bag through.
I remember that. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Liz hands me a bag to carry through security. Bells start ringing. Things start going off. She had box cutters in there and scissors.
One box cutter.
You know, all kinds of stuff. And she hands it to me. I nearly lost TSA privileges. So one of the things that's been really good is we've had a lot of great people we've worked with. And I can remember there's some things that it's like it was meant to be. Like, I remember one time we were in Toronto and we were there at a trade show and we turn the corner on the street and we look up at the top of the hill and there is Vicky and John LaPlante. And it's like, what are the odds? And they were there working with a contractor, and we had a close relationship with them through the years, which really goes back to Linux days, but we were able to bring them into our program and they've done a world of good for a lot of people.
Same's true of Jim Henshaw.
Same with Jim Henshaw. And you know, I can remember when I had this soccer mom who was watching the practices because she didn't trust the coach or something. I don't know. She was one of those helicopter moms. But I was doing a survey on the Yellow Pages, if you can remember those. That was back when we had these phone book things. And anyway, I handed her one of the surveys to fill out while she was there. Well, it turns out she's a former Yellow Pages rep. As soon as I heard that, I started talking to her about coming to work for us. And she did. And man, yeah, Liz Patrick is the one who built Round Table Rewards.
Yeah, that was a really good one. So funny stories is the ghost pepper story.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got actually a multiple hot sauce stories around here. There's just a whole bunch of stuff about hot sauce because Matt and I both really like hot stuff and other people in the company don't feel the same way. So we had a company outing one time to go to, I think it was Texas Roadhouse. Is that
Rooster's Roadhouse.
Rooster's Roadhouse. We went to Rooster's Roadhouse and Matt challenged everybody to eat a hell slider. Now, I thought it was just a joke when they brought out the waiver for you to sign, the legal waiver before you ate one of those hell sliders. But it turns out there's actually a medical reason why you have to sign away and agree that you won't sue them. So I took one bite of it. I like hot stuff. I took one bite and stopped immediately and started guzzling water. And I asked them to bring me milk and everything to try and get this. Matt ate three of them and then Sarah ate one. Anyway, so we went back to the office with some dire effects. Matt went home with three that day.
Well, all of a sudden, I felt a strange rumbling, and as fast as I could casually walk to the bathroom, I went. And I felt like somebody was taking my intestines and just twisting them in a knot. And it's the closest a man can come to the experience of giving birth, I think. And I leaned over, and sweat's pouring off me like I've just run a marathon. And finally, it's over. I go back to my desk, and I'm just like, ah. And then about 30 minutes later, deja vu all over again. So I went home after that. But
You were not alone. The office got thin that afternoon.
Well, but to carry this further, a group decided they were going to go up there again from the graphics team. And we had this British guy there who was a barbecue critic for the Dallas Observer. And I looked at everybody and I said, okay, I'll pay for lunch if Gavin needs a health slider. And everybody pivots and stares at him instantly. And he's looking, oh, no fair. And he ate one, and then he wrote about it in the Dallas Observer. I think his opening line was, "Today I am a man."
Well, also, that was another disastrous attendee day. They came back. They all had some health sliders, and basically all of them went home early.
Yes.
Hey, so what? This is the 100th podcast, right?
This is the 100th podcast.
So you've done 100 of these, and this is the first time you've ever asked me to be on one.
Yeah.
So what gives?
Seriously.
Well, it's because, you know, we're leaving the company. It seemed like a good time to do it. I have certainly enjoyed working with you guys. It's been a great joy. I look forward to the next adventures.
You know, I think I'd like to leave with one thing. When we interview somebody, you know, I always make sure that I'm the last person to interview them. And the hiring decision has essentially been made by the time I get to someone. But I want to test the person just to do a gut check on them. And I've canceled a few of them this way, but I also want them to understand the importance of what we do at Service Nation. Because, you know, we have our mission statement is that we help service contractors improve their business financial performance, leading to a profitable exit strategy. That's not just words on a paper for us. It's something that we internalize. It's something that we believe in and love. And it's important for you to understand your role in the world, because it's not by accident or chance that you are considered essential services work. Because you're the people that keep the lights on at night. You're the people that make sure that our showers are hot and that our toilets flush. And you're the people that make sure our homes are cool in the summer and warm in the winter. You're the people that renovate and recondition our homes and businesses so that they're more livable. What you do is really important, and you deserve to live lives of prosperity, and you deserve to have success. And don't let anybody convince you otherwise, and take action so that you can generate the value and the wealth that you deserve and your family deserves. That's my closing thoughts.
I can't think we could possibly close on anything better. Thank you guys both for doing this, and that's a wrap. We're always looking for good ideas and interviews for our podcast. If you have an idea, or maybe you think you should be interviewed, just shoot an email to profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. That's profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. If you think what we're doing has any value, it would be very helpful if you would give us a great rating on iTunes. Thanks for your support. Hope to see you again soon. Bye.